Welcome to the Travelling Senorita, episode 188. I've come back down to Sydney Town to find a female chef. One of my favourite things to do is interview chefs, but when I get female chefs, I get really excited, not just because I'm a female, but because it's generally has been a male-dominated industry. But I've noticed in the kitchen there is a lot more female chefs coming up through the ranks. And this young lady that we're interviewing today is at the helm as the executive chef of Bar Morris, which is in the recently opened Hotel Morris. And we'll discuss the history of that hotel because I was lucky enough to stay there recently in Pitt Street around the Chinatown end. So please welcome today executive chef of Bar Morris, Rosie Scatigna. Hola, ciao.
Ciao, thanks. Thanks for the young lady there.
Yeah, well, compared to myself, but we won't give too much away. Now, Rosie, we just had a brief chat then about where you grew up, and I have this theory with either cooks or foodies or chefs that they have been watching food as love, as art from a very young age. Because not everybody likes cooking and not everybody likes to be in the kitchen. So talk to me about growing up in Puglia, the region that you grew up, and who inspired you as a young lady?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I really define myself a super lucky person because I'm lucky that I come from Puglia. I'm not sure, like, many people now, Aussie people, used to go there now, right, for their summer holidays. So it became it becomes actually a cool hotspot. So I come from like a big family, as you can imagine, full of cooks and chefs. I'm the only professional chefs in my family. But my grandma, my mom are like one of the best cooks that I ever seen in my life. I start cooking super late though, but I've been like indirectly influenced by them, I would say.
Let's talk about some of their dishes. Like when you like, let's take you back into the kitchen when you were a little girl. What were you watching?
Yeah, so like, well, fresh pasta was like a daily thing, and fresh focaccia, and we used also to have a like a wooden bake oven, so where we used to like bake our pizzas and bread. So usually it was like on a Thursday afternoon for us because all the shops are closed in the town where I come from, and all my aunties, mom, then my grandma, like we used to just stay around this oven and start baking pizzas and bread and cakes. Like everything is just more delicious if it's baked in a wooden fire oven. And so yeah, that's my remembering of these situations and these gatherings.
It just straight away I got a visual of being really community, you know, really family, a real warm feeling of like a Duomo in a small town. What's the name of the town?
The town is called Ceglie.
How many people?
It's 22,000. Yeah, so yeah, pretty small, but it's super vibey, especially during summertime. And yeah, as I said before, a lot of tourists, like from all around Europe, and but now we start seeing like a lot of Australians too, which is very nice.
You know, it's interesting with Puglia because I hadn't discovered it until a few years ago. It's the heel.
Yeah.
I mean, Italy, they always say, is a boot. And we've done the northern areas. We've obviously, everyone knows Venice and Florence and Rome and Amalfi. Yeah. Sorrento, those areas. But when you come further through, I think it was the place Matera that I went to, which was the cultural capital of Europe, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And I discovered this on the way to Puglia because travel writers were starting to really talk about this place called Puglia, which is essentially the heel of the boot on the way down to Sardinia Sicily. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty authentic. I mean, as you said, most of the people, like, of course, they know Florence, Venice, Rome, which are like beautiful cities, of course. But I think if you go down Puglia, Calabria, Sicily, you really go to discover the authentic part of Italy. And yeah, people are super friendly. The food is awesome and super cheap, which is like so nice. And yeah, that's just a novelty down there, but yeah, it's beautiful.
I hope that hasn't changed with the influx of tourism. Like the prices, have you still seen it be really authentic and affordable?
Yeah, look, 2 years ago, it was the last time I've been there. There was like still under control, nothing crazy. Of course, if you go like in the touristy restaurants, the trapped tourist trap, yeah. Like it's, yeah, everywhere is like this, but you need to know where to go. And it's very important if you're lucky enough to know someone that comes from there, right? To get suggestions.
I know you now. you're my new best friend.
Exactly.
I have friends all over the world, but I didn't.
You are invited for lunch to my mom's house.
Oh my god! I had friends all over the world, but I didn't have one in Puglia. So big tick for today. Now, how does the a young lady, you know, living in a regional town with her nonna and her mom and mama and everyone there? How do you, I guess, escape and go and study to become a lawyer?
So I'm the youngest of three kids. My eldest sister decided to go and study in Turin in the north of Italy. That's also what my brother did, and then I followed their story as well. So I decided to study law, and because I guess that's what like young guys that they do, like, I mean, you go to high school and then you go to uni, like almost everyone goes to uni in Italy, right? But I don't think you are like mature enough to make a good choice and, you know, and understand, or you don't really know what to do in your life when you are 19 years old, I reckon, right?
Same in Australia.
So I decided to just give it a go. I liked it, but it wasn't for me. I just spent all my time like cooking for my friends, but I wanted to also graduate because I didn't want to disappoint my parents, I guess. And I just did it in 3.5 years. I got my degree, but then I decided, look, I love cooking and now it's my time to shine. I talked to my mom. They weren't super happy at the beginning, even if they understood. But because, of course, this industry is not an easy one like many others. But the long hours, and it's not like being like sitting on a desk. That's what she always says to me. But then she understood, and also my dad, that it was the way I wanted to follow my passion, I guess.
And so how do you bridge the gap between studying law and then becoming a chef? How did you do that? Where did you go?
So I've been in London for like a year after my uni, just to make some money and start learning English. And then I decided to attend like one of the most important cookery school in Italy, Alma School, that is located in Parma. And after Alma, I went back to London and just got a job in a 2 Michelin star over there. Spent 2.5 years in UK, and then I decided to just come over here in Australia. And I joined the team at Aria with Joel Bickford, the helm back then, and opened after 2 years Shell House.
Wow.
In the city as well. And after Shell House, I decided to do another opening.
Yeah, I like that. You have the energy for that. Now, tell me what you learned when you were studying in Parma. What is it about? I mean, you've had that upbringing in that really authentic. Oh, yeah. What did you learn?
It was so beautiful. If I, like, sometimes I stop for a moment and remembering those times, like, just beautiful. You are surrounded with people that have your own passion, and all the teachers, they are, of course, former chefs in, like, 1, 2, 3 Michelin star in Italy, and it's every day talking about food. That's what like our life is all about, right? Not all about, but mostly
pretty much,
I would say 80%.
Yeah.
And but it's not just about the studying, it's about the tasting of the nice product. Like if you, I don't know, the smell of culatello. I still remember when we went to this Michelin star near Parma. It's called Spigaroli,
and
it's most famous producer and the biggest producer of culatello. Oh my God, all these culatello, they were like dry aging, even for the Queen of England. Wow. Back then. It was like four years ago.
Is that the
and
one
they had all these names.
Is that the one that's on the chef's table? Did they do a story about him?
That's Massimo Bottura, which is in Modena, that I didn't have the chance to try. But it's called Massimiliano Spigaroli and it's like just beautiful. But even not just the Michelin stuff, but the trattorias, the, you know, all the charcuterie shop, because their pasta, of course, fresh pasta and charcuteries are big things in Emilia Romagna. And yeah, I was like super lucky to study there.
You know, something I loved about being down in that region, in Matera, going across to Puglia, is the agritourism. So it was very agriculture focused. So this is something that's, as you would have seen in Australia, I think it's kind of, I mean, we've all grown up with having good produce in Australia, but what's happened is they've started to brand it in the sense of understand the farmer, respect the farmer, and say the beast, like the wild venison, put that from nose to tail. Whereas in Italy, what I found is like there was cheeseries everywhere. Like this was just a normal thing to be having agriculture that arrives on your plate. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I totally understand and agree with you, because even when I was a kid, I remember to see my grandpa and we had these all these chickens, and we used to get this milk from the goat that I remember her name. And it was just farm to the table in like in the same location. It's just crazy, right?
Yeah. And I think this is the thing that I'm noticing in the Renaissance in food in Australia. We've done fine dining really well in the 90s, and we've progressed into more like tapas bars. And we've, as you'd know, we try every cuisine in this country.
Yeah, exactly.
But
that's
I think what I'm noticing, or what I'm loving to eat, I can speak from, is the authentic taqueria, or the authentic, Italian eatery. And that's something that I noticed about Bar Morris when I walked in. So let's have a chat about how you got to the helm of Bar Morris, and can you talk me through the history of that hotel? Because there's something about when you walk in that building, I felt like I was in it's kind of retro Italian, but also in contemporary New York. I can't really describe it, but give me your thoughts on this.
So yeah, after Shellhouse, I was like seeking for my first head chef role. I just wanted to do the jump, let's say. And I met Atsuko, the GM. We liked each other since day one, and we are strongly believer like of this project since day one. Yeah. And I remember when I stepped in this hotel, I was like, wow, this is like, it's a small hotel, 82 rooms, but everything has an history. It's based on the Divine Comedy by Dante Alighieri. So we have Bar Morris, which is the dining area in ground floor that is resembling the Inferno of Dante. So the indulgence, the intimacy, dark, moody, that's what we try to represent in the dining room with these all hot color, like burgundy, red. And then we go in the room, which they represent the purgatory. And finally, we arrive in the heaven, paradise. Which is our like terrace bar that is not open yet, but is like willing to open in probably a year time. So Bar Morris has been the building per se has been the tallest building in Sydney for like around 30 years. So this is a nice tip. And as you enter in, it's like you have the feeling to be in a Italian palazzo of like in Florence, right? Mm-hmm, of the 900.
Yeah.
And it's a nice mix because it's super vibey. and you have this funk music, as you said, it almost is like being in a wine bar in New York. Mm. And this is what I like, because it's a non-cliché location, it's a non-cliché food, non-cliché cocktails, so you can find something different. And that's what I try to do with my food, right? I try to present some classics, but with like a twist or in a fun way, right? So people, they don't just get bored of the same dishes over and over, like the same burrata that you can find everywhere. Not that I don't like it, I love it, don't get me wrong. But I try to like just do something a little bit different so we can all have fun. Team included.
I think what I loved about walking in, because I was checking into the hotel and the eatery wasn't open per se, but you walk into the bar. This is why I thought New York, because you walk into like the lobby bar, which is actually the eatery, and then you look around, you go, oh, there's some really cool booths here, and then you realize that you've actually walked into Bar Morris, right? And you can almost visualize that it would be buzzing later on with pasta and smells and all this amazingness.
A unique environment, because as you said, the lobby is actually the part of the dining room.
I like I like that, because it straight away I just felt like everything was there in one. Like I could have the Campari at the bar, I know I can come back for the pasta, I can go upstairs into my room.
Yeah, it's like very dynamic, yeah.
And I love that there's going to be the rooftop terrace too, because that's a hidden gem right there. There's a lot of rooftop bars opening up in Sydney, so I can't wait for you guys to join that.
Exactly.
Now let's talk about the location, because it's actually in the Chinatown end of Pitt Street, around the corner from the Capitol Theatre, which is where I just went and saw Beauty and the Beast. So obviously there's a connection between theatre and dining, which again gives me that kind of Broadway feel. What do you feel about that end of town?
Yeah, look, we say it's kind of a secret gem, because of course you don't expect to find like a boutique Italian inspired hotel in Thai town. I like this. It's just different, right? And it's nice also because we have a lot of walk-ins that are like surprised to find us there, and it's just we are where people were like wouldn't expect it for us to be, and it's something that is fun and different.
Well, you're making a real name for yourself there, which makes me think that it's not just the hotel guests, you're getting local coverage. Like people are talking about this young female chef who knows what she's doing, who's from Puglia. So obviously the connection between the GM, you and your experience, and I mean, you've only been a chef for 6 years, which, you know, speaks volumes in the fact that you wanted to elevate into an executive chef role. So you obviously have a few elements to your brain. You've got the creative side, but you've also got that organized management side. How's it been for you as a young chef in that executive role?
I felt ready to step in this position, but of course until you do it you don't realize how big it is. So I want to be honest, and it wasn't that easy and smooth like I believe for everyone else. But I've been learning a lot, and I love the management side of the role, and also like understand every personality, like dealing with the team. That's, I think, the most difficult part, because it requires a lot of understanding and patience, being emotionally intelligent, because sometimes you're stressed and you're tired and you just want to get over with it, but no, it's not the case, right, when you are in a senior position. And I love the fact that it's dynamic, because I need to take care of the hotel side and the restaurant side, which is very different. I've never done hotel. I come from like a fine dining restaurant background, so I'm learning a lot of new stuff, numbers, finance, and yeah, that's all things that I really love, and I want to keep going in this way.
I think it's I think it really suits you to be in this position. So let's talk about some of the dishes that you've created, because I just want to hear about your food, because I'm hungry. Tell me about them.
Yeah. So we have like a really big snack menu. A few pasta courses, like three or four mains and dessert. So the whole concept is the sharing bit. I like people to just stay at the table, have a fork of that, have a taste of that, and then just keep talking about food, about what did they do last night, and you know, just in a playful way. But like few of the signature dishes that they are on the menu since day one are like, one that I really love and is like super interesting is the savory madeleine. So madeleine is usually a sweet French pastry sponge that I recreate, like, and I revise in a savory way. So it's like full of Parmesan cheese instead of sugar and preserved lemon for like an acidity hint. And then it's filled with like an andouille mayo and some sliced guanciale.
Oh, wow.
So it's like a sandwich, but that resembles the shape of a madeleine, this shell-shaped sponge. And the feedback on these snacks is super nice. It's like very good. And I'm very happy about this.
It's like your signature. It's a signature that you've created. I love that. And what about, what's a pasta dish that you're, you know,
so expanding on? Another one is like the cannelloni. This is like a tubular shaped pasta that my grandma used to make a lot when I was a kid. And it's filled with a Genovese ragu, which is a pork slow cooked ragu with a lot of onion and a lot of white wine. And the top part, you just finish off with a beautiful tomato and rich tomato sauce, and bitter leaves in this case are chicory and dive with a lot of fermented chili through it. So it's like comfort food.
really nice.
And
it makes me think of Puglia, because I know the difference between the regions now. I've been to Puglia enough times, and that to me has got a real Puglia flavor to it.
Yeah, it does. With the ferment, with the chili, the chicory, there's like a lot of like these kind of vegetables, wild vegetables that we used to go and pick in autumn especially. So yeah, it reminds me of home definitely. Yeah.
And what have you put in your the Australian side? What have you noticed in some of the ingredients that you can include on the menu?
So we have like few native ingredients, like I'm changing now menu, like for a summertime I'm doing this like school prawn fritters, sorry, with some native saltbush, fried saltbush. So
yes,
you have the savory of the prawn, but then you can match it with the savory of the saltbush. So you have these vegetables and fishy flavors, but they're like pretty similar. So I love like the guests to notice this matching difference, if we wanna call it like this.
Yeah.
And we have also different, especially Japanese ingredients like yuzu kosho, shishimi, which is this like furikake with 7 different spices. So yeah, we have a little bit of everything.
I have one of my closest friends, well, my two best mates are in Sydney. One of them has opened a you must go called Mammy's. It's a she's Mexican, so it's on Bondi Road, and nothing's over $20. It's full authentic Mexican style, and she's come from a
cool, love it.
Yeah, and it's just gone crackerjack. Like, it's in Sydney Morning Herald as one of the top places to open. It's called Mammy's. The other best friend of mine, who I was down with on the weekend for her birthday, is Italian from the north, and she's a cook. So she decided to do all of her, for 60 people at her 60th, all of the food. And she went around the globe with it, but she's such a finessed cook. Every time I go there, her Italian heritage is just laid out on the plate, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner. So when I'm talking with you, I'm like, you've got that same love of food and just that passion that both of those women that I just talked about, who are not chefs, they're cooks, they just love cooking. But
when I talk about food, for example, with my sister, with my brother, I can share the same. Of course, passion. I'm a professional chef, is a bit different, but we are like sitting like to have like lunch and we are already talking about what are we having for dinner. It's like,
I love that. That is my favorite thing about Europe, you know. Yes. It's just like, that's how it is.
Just everything is just around food and of course also drinks, especially wine. And
and so let's talk about, you mentioned burrata before. I was going to give this to you. I love burrata and I'm in an area that there's a lot of great cheese in northern New South Wales. Mm-hmm. But I went to a restaurant called Agnes in Brisbane and they did a burrata dessert. So they made a burrata ice cream.
Yeah, nice.
The burrata was in the ice cream mixed together with a basil olive oil pond in the middle, but it was still a dessert.
Beautiful.
It was so good. So what's one of your favorite desserts? Because I'm such a dessert girl.
So one of my favorite desserts, definitely profiterole. It's super rich. I love French classic dessert. You can give me like a crepe Suzette with some cracked black pepper on top. Oh my God, I can.
Yum.
I can feel it in my mouth now.
Me too.
I didn't have lunch. So.
Me either. You and I should be hanging out this afternoon.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm a fan of French dessert. Gelato, of course. We make all our own gelatos here in Morris. Try to have some fun with it.
So before we go, I just wanted to mention the breakfast because I haven't had a chance to dine with you, but I'm definitely coming down at the end of February to hang out with you. I love the little booths in Bar Morris as well. It feels so homely when you go in there. It's such a nice vibe. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it's unassuming, you know, but you can just tell that it's hitting the marks and it's ambiance and it's food. And it's also part of a really historic building, which is really impressive. Breakfast when I came down, because I travel a lot, I'm not a buffet girl and I'm not a big breakfast girl. But this one hit the mark because it was fresh. So you had your hamons and your cheese, and then you had your fresh fruit, your fresh juice, freshly baked goods, fresh bread. And then the winner for me was like a frittata, you know? So I think a really good coffee. And I just think that's how, the buffet is interesting. It's an American concept. It's not... It would not work in Bar Morris, but you just hit the mark on the breakfast. So that was coming out of your head too, hey?
Yeah, it took like a little bit of work because I wanted to present something that had like a home feel.
Yes.
And not just putting the usual packed cereal in like single portion, or you know, like what I'm talking about when you go in a hotel and you find this impersonal kind of,
but it's not sustainable food. Either like you thought about sustainability, like there wasn't a lot
of course wasting. It's a big thing with a core, we like single use plastic.
Correct.
It's banned and all these eco options, so we're trying to I thought about what can you have when you are in a masseria in Puglia in a summertime and you have this freshly baked cake, frittata, because people love like an egg option, right? It's not a thing in Italy or in Europe, like of course UK, but the Northern Europe, it's like you can find it more, but not in the Southern Europe because we go sweet. Mm. So freshly baked cake, but you want this frittata, and you can make yourself a toasty with some Roma tomato, some like beautiful cheese, mozzarella bocconcini. So
you nailed it. You nailed the breakfast. Now, just before we go, I love the way your face lights up when you talk about food. It's so good. Just before we, I will get my podcast on YouTube one day, but I can see your face, and you're gonna send me a photo so everyone else can see it. Just before we go, what's a place in the world that inspires you? And I know what you're gonna say.
You mean a place for food or in general?
Yeah, I just think both, really. A place that really lights you up.
So of course I will say where I come from, but I just don't want to say the same things over and over.
No, I wanted you to say that because I can feel it in your heart. And hopefully your family listen to this.
it's definitely takes a big, big place in my heart.
And in your it's food. Not, yeah.
Yeah, yes, exactly. You can see that in the food I try to create and to cook all these nice flavors and produce. But as you said before, like before we started the podcast, like Northern Spain, for example, is another big example.
Like
for
the Basque area. Like, you like the Basque area?
Yeah, I've been to like San Sebastian recently. Yeah, it's like just amazing. That's but what, they have the same culture that we have, right?
Oh, different again. Yeah. Well, no, same, but different, isn't it? Like, it's got that real, like, really, the Basque area is really interesting on the border there from France and Spain. There's just so many flavors.
Unique.
And you know what? I think Sydney's really lucky to have you, Chef Rosie, and the fact that you're a woman in this position at a young age, that shouldn't be unusual. This is absolutely where you're meant to be, and I can see that you're going to be continuing to do great things there. I am hearing word on the street from locals that they're visiting Bar Morris, so there's a reason for that, and that's because you're at the helm with your authenticity and your training, and you've also got the management and the team behind you. So thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, girlie. I'm salivating
from the I need your food right now, but I will see
no
you
worries. We have an appointment end of February, remember?
We have an appointment on the end of February. Thank you so much. Ciao, ciao.
Thank you. Ciao.